friends. Country been down so long, it's a must I win. Hold my place like cast iron, won't break, won't bend. Stuck them racks in an all black Camuto bag. Louis V, Drake, Dover starch, Bowman pants. Used to rock them camo.
Yo, 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 what's going on, y'all? It's a special episode today. Shout out to B. Willingham for setting it all up. But y'all seen this man before. Once again, I'm Corporal Rivers. And today, we're just going to do a nice little interview talking about these good old refs and what they deal with on the daily. And, you know, just why this young man chose to be what he is and how he's going to, you know, do the best he can at calling these games. You know, the title of the show today is Getting It Right with the Refs. With no further ado, our special guest, been on the show plenty of times before, D-Ref. What's going on, man? How you doing today?
Hey, appreciate it. Appreciate it. Glad to be here. Glad to be here. I always appreciate some time to talk about officiating.
For sure. For sure, man. So, man, we're going to get right into it, man. Won't hold you long. I know you got to get ready to get on the road. When you leaving? You say you're leaving Wednesday or something?
Yeah, here coming up, heading out, gonna watch the games with a couple of my boys. We're gonna watch all the games live and in color in Vegas. So looking forward to getting out.
Ah, yes, for sure. So, hey, the first question on the table, man. How did you get into being a ref?
You know, it's funny. I only do basketball now, but I actually started out on football, and I was a kid in high school, just trying to make some money. And the youth program needed officials. They paid cash. They teach you what to do. And it was good money. You got money, whether you work the clock or whether you're one of the field refs. And so I got right off the bat, started making some money, saw officiating could be a hobby. And from there, I started when I was in college. After that, it was just a matter of starting out with some intramurals. And I went from intramurals and then just it took off real quick and in a hurry.
Okay. So you only did your other sport is football, right?
I did some other sports just around intramurals in college and whatnot. Shout out Georgia Southern Intramural Program, who had a really big nationally known program for the way that they developed officials. It's a storied program when it comes to officiating. I might be a little biased, but the records speak for themselves. One thing that people probably don't know is, just like any other collegiate athlete, you can become an All-American as a referee as well. So Georgia Southern's got a proud lineage of All-American referees, including myself. I was an All-American referee.
Okay, man. So once you got done with college, where did it go from there? What does your story go from there?
You know, after my first year refereeing, my freshman year of intramurals, as the season was ending, the intramural season was ending, they told me that they had state tournaments. And I'm like, I don't even know what that means. So just like your intramural programs, they would send teams to state tournaments to compete for best in the state. And then from state, you go regional and regional on to nationals. So my first year officiating, they decided that I was doing a good job and decided to take me to state, place top 10 in the state as a rookie, just starting out. And these are refereeing these games where you're getting feedback evaluations from clinicians after every game, halftime, every game, you're getting write-ups, all the things, videotape breakdowns. And after that, they pulled me and had me start doing high school. So once I graduated from my sophomore year of college, I was doing middle school and high school basketball refereeing. Okay. So it's just continued on from there to where I am today, where I'm still calling high school, but also now making my way into work in college and working my way up in the college circuit.
Okay. So since you started, what schools are you, you know, what colleges are you doing?
Yeah. So I live in Austin, Texas. the way it works, I work JUCO, so I work junior college as well as D3 and some D2. Okay. The way officiating is, you can think about officiating like a job, and it's kind of like a contract job that technically you have to be hired on every year. So I have assigners that I work for that are in control of different leagues. So the ACC, for example, has a head of officiating, and he brings a new staff on every year. Now, for the most part, if you were on staff last year, you're probably on staff this year. As people start to age out, as people move up from, say, D3 to D2, then they're getting less games at D3 and more games at D2. It's always changing, but you have to get hired on. And then it's like a job, and you're getting hired on. So right now, my assigner has basically the entire state of Texas, a little bit of Oklahoma, a little bit of New Mexico, got a couple of schools in Louisiana even. And we've got, between my assigner, who is Tony Stigliano, and his son, John Stigliano, they run men's and women's officiating for junior college, Division III, Division II. They've pretty much got all the conferences in the state of Texas, some of those surrounding areas. So being on staff with them, I mean, I can go anywhere. Last year, I had a game in New Mexico one Saturday, and then the next week, I'm right up the street here in Texas, an hour from my house. So it varies, but it's a job. It's a job that you can get hired.
For sure.
You get hired on every year. You're hoping to get retained. Typically, you are. But at the same time, you're always getting evaluated. It's not just when we're at camp in the summer that we're getting evaluated. Every game, every time that you're pissed off at the refs, just know that those plays are getting cut. I've gotten phone calls. My assigner calls at 7 o'clock in the morning after game days, and he'll ask for a report on something that happened. If there's something there, or he'll ask for the clip or something like that. He's already seen the clip. All of our games are videoed. We break tape. We're reviewing after every game. The crew chief has to send in a report. Regardless of whether or not everything went fine or everything not so fine.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, what are some, you kind of alluded to a little bit, but what are some wild situations that you could tell us that's happened while you've been reffing the game?
Man, it's funny. A lot of the clips you see online are of like fans and coaches going crazy. Like most of that stuff's AAU travel ball stuff over the summer, or it's not usually school ball. It's not a lot of times. So personally, I don't do a lot of that stuff anymore. I got a good daytime job. I don't tear up my paychecks when I get them from refereeing, but it's not my main source of income by any means. Right. So I'm not one of those guys who's chasing checks. And I say that just to say, the situations are what you put yourself in, right? So when you go in there and you're just taking your time, just trying to get up and down the court, like that's when stuff pops off. That's when things get crazy. But I mean, I've had state playoff games where we had an administrator come into our locker room afterwards trying to argue with us about stuff in the rule book that he just didn't know. And this is a state playoff game.
Oh,
I mean, I've had police escorts out of gyms before just because things are crazy. I mean, you name it, we see it, we hear it. Some guys are better at tuning things out than others when it comes to things that you hear from the crowd. I've heard all kinds of stuff from the crowd. Generally speaking, it doesn't bother me. You say something funny, I might laugh, but it's, you just never know what you're going to get. And I get it. I think that one of the things that I like about officiating is I've never gone into a game mad and walked out of a game mad, right? It doesn't matter if my girl and I are having a bad day. It doesn't matter if I had a bad day at work. Once the ball goes up, like, I couldn't keep thinking about that stuff if I tried. And it takes me completely out of it. And those fans, those coaches, those players, they don't care who I am. They don't care about my life outside of officiating. And there's actually something that's like freeing about that, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, and when I hear stuff like, oh man, you're just out here for check. Like, nah, I'm really not. It's not to say that there aren't some people that are, right? But at the same time, I'm out here just because I love the game. I love being a part of it. I love what I do. I don't care who wins the game. I really don't. I don't referee my alma mater. I'll never referee Georgia Southern. But even if I did, I don't care. I'm just there to see the game. We do have some rules in place about refereeing your own schools, though.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Any wild stories from other refs? I mean, I know you've probably seen met so many refs already, because of how long you've been in it. But any stories? I mean, you say y'all had a police escort. I mean, I'm just like, you've seen what goes on in the NBA within the last couple of years, and that that melee that they just had with University of South Carolina women and LSU. So, like, is there anything like that? Like, is it really like any like death threats or anything that you've heard from any other refs?
Dude, I'll tell you. So there was I was refereeing a game. It was a men's league game. And I don't normally referee a lot of men's league because it's a bunch of has-beens and never was. Right. And I love it. And, you know, some of our friends, they got to hang it up right at some point, or they just got to have a good time. But I'm refereeing a men's league game. It's Saturday, big tournament, teams from all over. And this guy is just, he's on my case. And he's probably about 5'4", thinks that he probably should have been starting in the NBA. And he's just annoying. He's obnoxious. Right. And every time anybody comes into the lane, it's just like, wow. And he picks up three fouls like it's nothing. And even his teammates are like, dude. And so I tried to talk to him. And I'm like, man, you gotta chill out. And he's like, the next thing I know, he's like, oh, Mr. NBA over here. Oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And he's just got something to say every time I even open my mouth. I'm like, all right, cool. This is going to work itself out. This dude comes in and he just grabs some guy, picks up his fifth foul, and he just slams him to the ground.
Whoa.
And it's like the other team's getting mad and we're like, hey, hold up. We're not having any fights. And so he gets his fifth foul. And in this one, they get six fouls before they foul out, just like the NBA. And so he throws this dude to the ground and then he gets up. We call it an intentional foul on him. It's still his fifth. It doesn't count as a tech or anything like that. And he gets up and he gets in my face and he starts yelling at me. And when I tell you, I have never been cussed at the way that this man cussed at me. I'm not a huge guy, right?
Right.
I'm 6'4".
Okay.
When you're 5'4" and you got to look up and this dude's just going in, right? His teammates can't calm him down. So you got to go. So here's number six. And I'm tossing you out of the game. You can't stay in the building. Like, you got to go. And next thing I know, this dude's like, he wants me outside. He's going to stab me. And he's just steady cussing me out.
Woo.
They had three people that ended up having to take this guy out of the gym. And it was like his teammates are apologizing. Like, dude, we're sorry. Like, please don't penalize. Mm-hmm. Like, we get it. Not even you. Like, we didn't even want him on the team. But this dude is four courts over, still getting pushed out the gym, just cussing me out, threatening my life like no tomorrow.
Oh, well, I mean, so how did you, like, they threw him away, or like when you got rid of the gym, what happened?
There was three people that walked out to my car with me. There was there was a security guard, another referee who off-duty security, and it's a sad state, but I'll be the first to say there was multiple people that were packing, making sure that everything was fine, just because of the number of incidents that we see on TV and we see that happen now, and it's a sad state of affairs. And it wasn't like we're not giving out scholarships. There wasn't a $1 million tournament. It wasn't even like it's not even like it was a block charge play and it was a 50-50 play. We're talking about a series of events that it is just like, it's stupid, and stuff like that happens. And that's why that's why you see a lot of the stuff that happens. And you can even see on like AAU videos and stuff when things are going crazy. Just look at the professionalism of the people that you see, referees included. You're not getting guys like me to referee those kind of games anymore. You're just not going to, because it's not worth it. It's not worth it for me to deal with people's parents who all think that their kids should be getting multi-million dollar NIL deals now, stuff like that. It's just like, at that point, it's not worth it, right? I don't need the cash that bad. So then when you start to get people off the street who don't know what they're doing, that's when stuff escalates and that's when things get bad, right? So, I mean, there's definitely a changing of the guards that has to happen in kind of our youth athletics and whatnot, and what we're expecting, and even what we're asking of AAU coaches, right? Like, there's AAU teams now that those kids don't practice. They just play some games together. And those
coaches, I heard about that. They do like one or 2 days during the week, and then now they're playing the game together. They got no chemistry except for playing in the actual game, or actually, you know, one or two of them may go to school together and play on their, you know, school team. But other than that, these people are coming from, you know, all walks of life to just come play basketball, and you expect them to be, since they're supposedly the best of the best, you know, in their state or in their city, and now they're playing, trying to play together, you'll never get any team chemistry. And then, like you said, you know, those parents think their kids should be playing, but well, they should be starting and playing the whole game. Like, why is my kid sitting down?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
My kid ain't getting no PT?
It's changing basketball, honestly. These AAU teams, and it's not that I hate AAU, but the way that it's changing some of the landscape of basketball, you even look at now as it moves up to high school, and you've got kids who aren't playing high school because they can get sponsored with their AAU team. And you got AAU teams that are now trying to supersede freaking playing high school, getting state championships and things like that. But they're sponsors now. They're sponsors when it comes to AAU ball that they can get and move up and whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to the landscape of college basketball. Just as you even look at NIL, right? Because when you're not used to playing organized basketball and you just try and do all this one-on-one stuff, and then you get to college, that's when you're not going to get that playing time. And then you have a bunch of one and done. So then you're not building chemistry there either. Right. And then what happens? Right. And we wonder why there's less set plays than ever before. In the NBA, it's a trickle down. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
What do you, so you're on this level. So you say you're the highest you've been is D2. Do you want to get to D1? Is that something that you want to do, or do you just want to stay where you're at? And I mean, you like what you're doing right now. Like, how do you feel about going to, going up another level?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. The goal is to go to D1 in some capacity at some point, right? But you also don't see a lot of people that are in their 30s on TV, right? On those primetime games and things like that. It takes a while, and truth be told, refereeing's still a good old boy system, right? And I mean that seriously. It's not even a good old boys and girls system. No, it's still a good old boys system, right? So if I'm not doing what my assigner likes, it's not like I can just go jump and go somewhere else. They're going to hear about it, right? And they talk. Right. It's a small network, and it's run by a few small – the people at the top, it's pretty small, right? So you got to know what you're doing and how it goes. Yeah. So, D1 it's my goal. It's not a goal for next year or anything like that, but I mean, it takes a lot. It takes a lot to get there. I've had the opportunity to work some D1 scrimmages and come in and work with some teams. And it's great. It's great experience. It's great to, you see some of these college coaches that you've only seen on TV and whatnot. And then you're working with them, you're talking to them about the points of emphasis for the year, but there's a lot that goes into D1. The guys that you regularly recognize on TV, I can promise you the hours that those folks are spending watching game tape, right? Or sending clips back and forth, which is something that I even do with some of my referee friends. And it's block charge plays. It's plays at the rim for verticality. There's all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, at the base level, it's knowing the rules, right? And it's knowing the rules when it comes to timing issues on what resets the shot clock and what doesn't, what to do if things were reset when they didn't. Because if you screw up one of those things and you reset the shot clock when it shouldn't have, and that ends up costing a team a possession or a game late, that affects your season, right? Like, that might mean that you don't get any more games from that assigner. Like, that there are ramifications for stuff like that, because if they can't count on you to know the rules and do things right when it comes down to it, they don't need you, right? Because there's online, right? You're talking scholarships, you're talking coaches' jobs. I mean, you think about it, these coaches going into this NCAA tournament are coaching for their jobs, right? That's their livelihood and the trickle down. So you can't have things that are avoidable. When it comes to judgment calls, yeah, we can work on positioning. We talk a lot about positioning and putting ourselves in the best position to see things, but three referees versus 10 players, right? On the court, plus two coaches, and there's a bunch of fans there too. So, like, there's a lot going on. And so sometimes tape breakdown is just about positioning, and it's you're standing here, right? If you take one step out, you have a better look because you got a wider look and you can see, right? Or it's making sure that you know that this wasn't your primary matchup. This was actually your primary matchup, and here's why. And this is how it beat you. And this is why you didn't see the foul underneath that you missed, that this coach then screamed at you about because you did miss it. And then you had to go over because he's acting like a jackass. Now you got to give him a technical. And now you've changed the entire landscape of the game because you didn't take one step to your left. But, like, that's real. And that's real at all kinds of levels, whether that's a high school game, whether that's a college game, whether that's a freaking NBA finals game. And that stuff happens. I mean, I've done stuff even in camps and in trainings where we're testing out new technology with wearing glasses that have cameras on them so that we can then put it with game film to see exactly where you were looking versus where you should have been looking or where you could have been looking on something else.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about positioning and you're talking about looking at, you know, keeping your eye on the game and on the players. Say the ball is at the top of the key. Do y'all talk about who's going to be looking? Do y'all look at a certain area or do y'all look if the ball is moving? Do y'all have to stay positioned looking at a certain area or somebody's going to stay on the ball, looking at where the ball is at the whole time? Like, how do y'all come up with that?
Yeah. So in officiating, you've got at most levels, at the top levels, right? You have three officials and all three officials have a coverage area of the floor that it kind of breaks down into. And there's a little bit of variation between men's and women's in high school and college as to how that stuff goes. But there's primary coverage areas on the floor that dictate where you are. Now, if a team is setting up their offense in a way that doesn't make sense, you may have to adjust your coverage area and adjust your plays, adjust what you're doing. But for the most part, like, that stuff's pretty universal. But one of the things that you may or may not notice when you're watching a game is referees are constantly switching, right? So you typically on ball side, right? Ball side, strong side, you want two referees, right? So you'd have the one at the very top and then the one that's down on the lead. And then on the other side, you've only got one referee who's going to be basically in between. So say free throw line extended, kind of in between the two on the opposite side of the court. So when the ball's on the strong side, right, you got strong side officials, you got two officials over there. That's typically where most of the action is, right? Mm-hmm. That's where most of your players are going to be, or they're coming to. So that's why you're putting it there. Now, during live ball, the ball may flip, right? And the strong side may flip. And so what we're doing is we're constantly rotating and switching. So if the strong side now moves over because the ball goes over and it gets settled, right? We're not talking about just passing it back and forth. But when the ball gets settled and say they're trying to post up a big man on the opposite side, well, now your guy on the baseline is going to move over, which is going to force the other official up and then the other one down. And so then you've created a rotation, right? So now you've flipped which side is the strong side.
Okay.
That's constantly happening throughout the game. You don't want to be bouncing back and forth and causing switches every 2 seconds throughout a play. But you got to find a rhythm because you go back down the other way to the other side of the court, whoever's out top is now going to be on the baseline.
On the baseline, okay. Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
So it's a triangle that's moving and rotating. But you're going to throw it off, right? Because if I'm watching the play and I miss a rotation and I don't know that my partner came over, well, I'm supposed to be on the baseline and there's a fast break. And then all of a sudden he's coming up on me. I don't know that I'm supposed to be on the baseline. We got no coverage down there.
Right.
Then we got nothing, right? So there's constant switches and rotations that are happening. And whatnot, but it's all based on primary coverage areas and what the ball is doing. So part of the film breakdown that we're doing on our side, it might not just be for watching ourselves. So yeah, I review a lot of my own tape, but for a big game, I might watch tape of the teams that I'm getting ready to officiate from their games previously to see, understand their offense. How does this offense run? What kind of defense does the other team run traditionally? Because a team that likes to run man versus a team that runs a 3-2 zone, right? And how that's going to be defended. Like those are things for us to kind of make note of and understand going into a game. So that's something that we're talking about in pregame. We're talking about matchups. We're talking about defenses and offenses. I mean, I have offenses that they run 3-4 guards and they're splitting and they're all basically outside the 3-point line because they want to spread the floor.
Right.
So that's something for us to talk about as officials around our coverage area, right? Because that's a situation where we're not going to switch nearly as much because they force the ball outside a lot. And if that ball is not shooting down low, we're not doing ourselves any good going back and forth because we're missing stuff. We're missing stuff. Right. If I'm constantly trying to switch back and forth. So that's a situation where both of the guys on the outside might push up so that they can be around the guard play because you got to be there. You want to see through players, right? Because I don't want to be looking at anybody's back. So it's always about angles, and it's getting angles. Yeah. Players are quick, right? So the difference between a hand check, right, a hit across the arm, and a good steal, I mean –
it's positioning, definitely what angle you see it at, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and as a fan, right, there's nothing worse than seeing some guy break away and he's getting ready to dunk and that referee comes in and stops the play for a foul. And you're like, oh, no, it was clean, right? And so the difference is if I'm looking straight down and I can see through two players, I got a lot better of a chance of getting that play right than if I'm looking right here, right? Because you can't see what's going on right in here. So this is my hand. It's quick, right?
Yeah.
And I can't – then I'm guessing, right? And I can't tell you whether or not he hit his arm because the players – it doesn't matter what happens. The opposite player is going to tell you you missed something, right? He hit my arm. I didn't hit it. I only got ball. And I don't know if you know this, but players lie.
Ah, just a tad, man. Just a little bit. Just a little bit, man. I mean, you see how bad the flopping's gotten. Jesus Christ. And then about what do y'all talk about that flopping?
Flopping is a point of emphasis. And it's a penalty now. So if you are deemed, and it's a judgment call, but if you are intentionally trying to deceive, right, it's a penalty. And so it's gotten better. But it's another one of those things that like, we got to pick up, right? And we have to make sure that we're on our side calling it, and we're administering those fouls. It's basically an administrative technical. You're not killing a play for it, but it's hurting a team, right? Cause they're getting a free throw and it's stop and play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's gotten better in college, definitely over the last 2 years, not to say it's perfect, not to say we don't still have work to do there, but it's definitely gotten better. The NBA's put it in too. They've got a flopping rule now.
Okay.
I know some NBA refs pretty closely as well, as I do college D1 guys who referee every night of the week, kind of a thing, right? And we set out every season, we all have points of emphasis, and we've got points of emphasis for every league, division. Even in high school, we've got national federation for high school, for basketball, governing body that puts out points of emphasis as well. And then your individual state associations usually put out some stuff as well, points of emphasis, rules emphasis, things that they want you to focus on. And officials get those as well as coaches. Throughout the season in my college conferences, I'm on emails with coaches that are getting updates throughout the season. Hey, this is happening. We're really looking at this, or this can't happen. And it might be a play. It might be a clip of a play. It might be something like off-ball screens are not legal. We need to really make sure that we're watching off-ball screens, and we're penalizing the defense if they're not legal, because you can't have a backside cut and then dude's just getting chucked off his line, right? Like right? Do we get away with it a lot more in the NBA? Yeah, because the NBA is about scoring. Right. And there's a different level of athleticism and what they want to see. Right. But college, and we really hammer in on some of those rules and we look at that stuff. Those are things that we get emails about, and we're watching. Right. And it's like, oh man, these guys are really on XYZ tonight. It could be because it's a point of emphasis that it's coming through, or it's just a crew that's really by the book and trying to make sure that they are.
Okay. Hey man, you're giving some great information. I'm definitely learning something. Have you ever been bribed before?
You know, I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna be straight up with you. I thought getting into this, it was gonna be something I'd deal with a lot more. And the answer is not really. The only time it's ever been like that is some BS at some little kid game. Somebody's parent or something, but the high school level at the college level, no, you're not getting that.
Very well. I'm just trying to see, man, because they had refs that were betting on games, but still calling the games as well. So, and then you got the whole thing with the NFL. You know, everybody thinks every important game is, you know, it's scripted and stuff like that, man. How do you feel about, even though you did football for a little bit, if they called you back up to do a couple football games throughout the season, would you do any football games, or are you just going to stay straight basketball?
I'm a basketball guy. I love football. My stepdad's a college football coach. He played in the NFL. He coached in the NFL. I'm a big football guy too. I just, you know, it's time. You think about football, right? You're only getting one high school game a week, right? When it comes to varsity football, it's Friday night or bust. Basketball, I can get 2-3 games in a week.
Because they usually play. When do they usually play? Do they play? 'Cause I know we used to play like every Thursday.
States are different. So here in Texas, for the most part, our varsity, it's not even states, because it's even like cities, because different cities play on different nights. But for the most part, our varsity nights here are Tuesday, Friday, for boys. Okay. And then Yeah, but when I was in Georgia, we had Saturday varsity games too. So it varies, but you usually get 2-3 nights a week that you got high school, colleges all over the place based on TV deals, based on conferences playing different times. So it's all over. And that's the other thing, right? Like the difference between football, one of the differences, football and basketball, we don't work as a crew. Like the two guys that I work with on Tuesday night, I'm not then working with on Friday night. Like we move individually around and get placed in different places. But I like football. Could I call football? I could. I could probably jump back out, go to a camp, and I could probably pick football back up pretty quick just because I've been so close to the game for so long. Even like the mechanics of football. I mean, I know them pretty well. Boy also likes being indoors, so I don't
know. Yeah, buddy. For sure.
I'm in Texas. I can only take so much Texas heat. I don't need to be running up and down a football field all night. Not when it's 5 at 10 p.m.
Hey, that heat out there was no joke, man. When I was stationed out there in New Mexico, man, that was something else, man. That was something else. Just, you know, it feels okay outside, but then you walk back inside and you're like, oh yeah, it's pretty hot out. It's pretty hot out there, man. Pretty hot.
Yeah, I had a game in New Mexico, a basketball game on a Saturday afternoon, Hobbs, New Mexico. That is a door-to-door 7-hour drive from Austin, Texas.
Okay.
I got up first thing in the morning, real early, before the sun came up, drove there, did a game, right? And then during the season, I got games at 8 o'clock at night, and I might not be in Austin. I might be in Dallas, and then I'm driving home. So there's plenty of nights during the week that I don't get home till during the season. I don't get home till 2 a.m., 3 a.m., depending on where I'm at, how late the game is. Like, don't have it be a doubleheader where they got a women's game and then a men's game. And then you don't even know. But like that game in New Mexico, that's a 7-hour drive. Leave yourself time in case anything goes wrong. Get lunch, get in the locker room. Got to be in the locker room early for warm-ups and everything too. Did that game, showered, hit the road and came back.
Ooh.
And that was by myself. Sometimes I'm with somebody else that's from Austin and we ride together, but there's plenty of times when I'm on my own and it's not in JUCO D3, we're not lighting up the paychecks where it makes sense to fly. And a lot of times when you think about some of these cities that you're going to, it's not like you're going to a major airport. So it's not like flying even makes sense.
You're going to have to get a rental car or get Uber or Lyft services somewhere.
Exactly.
So what game in basketball, talking about basketball, what game would you not want to be ref, and what game would you want to ref? Like, would you not want to ref a rivalry game, or would you want to ref that rivalry game? Or would you want to, you know, you're doing college, you know, this game could be, you know, we just had the knockout games.
Yeah.
You know, which of those, you know, what situation would you want to be in, and what situation would you not want to be in?
You know, I would say it's the same. Like, I want the rivalry games. I want the sold out arena. It's crazy. Every call, half the arena's pissed off at you. I want that. It's a different feeling, right? But at the same time, like, that is a heavy lift. You can pull that down to any level. I've refereed sold out high school games, and it's standing room only before the JV game finishes because this is such a big varsity game kind of a thing. Right. So, I mean, I welcome all kinds of games. The games I don't want are blowouts. I don't want to beat down. I'm not out there just lollygagging. Those are some of the worst games, because that's when stupid stuff happens, right? When you look at the UT, University of Texas, Arlington, and the Grand Canyon championship game the other night that we had. You had 2.9 seconds left in the game. Double digit Grand Canyon's up. Dude gets a breakaway, comes down and throws down a monster jam. Bad sportsmanship? Sure. Is it legal? 100%. Exclamation point? Yep, whatever. I don't know the kid. I don't know if he's been hurt. He's just happy and excited. Whatever.
Right.
But he dunks that ball. After he dunks that ball, player from UTA comes up, gives him a shoulder and a forearm, gives him a little check. And before they can even stop play and get the technical to the kid, the inbounder for UTA chunks the ball at the kid. Right? Mm. So we've got a potential fight in a championship game with 2.9 seconds left. Mm-mm. And now all of a sudden you got to make sure that a melee doesn't break out. So that stuff is only further escalated in like a blowout game and things like that. It's like, you don't really get time off because like those are the games. It's a 30-point game. Some kid comes in for a layup and you get a two-hand push. He hits the ground. His mom comes out of the state. Like that's when stuff just gets bad, right? It's not good basketball. It's not entertaining, right? Like a team that's barely putting five players out there against a team that's just killing them, right? Like that's not fun. Like I don't need those games. Give me Ohio State, Michigan. Give me Duke, Carolina. I'll take those any day over that.
Gotcha. I gotcha, man. Oh man, that's crazy to think about that. You want the big time game.
Dude, give me all the smoke. Don't get me wrong, right? Like there's nerves for officials too. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on us. I mean, you got referees that are getting ready to work the NCAA tournament for the first time in their careers. Mm-hmm. And it's huge. Huge opportunity for them. But I can promise you this, they won't get a second game if the first one doesn't go well, right? Like there are people that have been refereeing for 40 years, literally 40 years, to get to what they're about to have for a play-in game on Wednesday night. Like, that means something to these guys too, these girls too, right? And women in officiating have a harder time when it comes to refereeing men's games, right? You got a public perception sometimes that says that they shouldn't be. And they have an uphill battle sometimes, right? And whether it's things that players are saying to them, hitting on them, or just thinking that they don't know the game, like it's tough, right? So there's people that have been working their tails off for these moments. And like any other profession, right? Like there's also people that have done it a million times and it's like tying their shoes. But I can tell you before I have a big game, refereeing is like riding a bike to me at this point, but the butterflies are there on a big game. I mean, I've walked out on state finals type games that are all about like who's going to state championships, right? I've worked at school state championship games before where these kids, some of them won't play basketball again in an organized fashion ever again, and they just lost a game. Mm-hmm. They're done. I still got more games to referee, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot to it. And so it's I'm not gonna say that there aren't referees out there that that don't take it seriously and don't, but like when you see these guys on TV and you're like, oh, how did he miss that? What you don't think about is the number of calls that they got right. We might have 60 fouls in a game, right? So if you have 60 fouls, 30 out of bounds plays, 20 violations, right? When it comes to hand checks, those are just times that they blew their whistle, right? That might be 150 times. That's not just basic out of bounds that are just easy, right? So then if you mix in the fact that they miss two fouls, in your opinion, right? Because judgment, right? Mm-hmm. You also got the beauty of sitting at home on your TV or seeing it on the big screen, whatever, in the arena, that they didn't have in that split second.
Yeah.
It's not that it's okay to miss calls, but if I walk away and I got somebody yelling at me in the parking lot, you missed the travel. If I missed one travel in a game, I literally had somebody come up to me in a grocery store one time and she said,
"Oh wow,
don't you referee?" I do. She's like, "Yeah, you were at such and such 2 weeks ago and you didn't call and it was like one call." I probably had seven games since then, four high school, two college, and something else, right? Mm-hmm. Four quarters in each one of those games, right? I worked with different guys in most of those games.
Yeah.
I missed one call. That's a pretty good night. It's people yell, "How do you sleep at night?" I'm like, "Very well." But I get it, right? That's as much as crazy, as much as I laugh and we joke about it, right? At the same time, like, yeah. I get it. Don't get me wrong. I get mad too when I'm watching games, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. I get pissed off watching games and watching my cousins play. And I'm like,
yeah.
Referee's out of position. He was in position. He would have missed that. Cashing it in. Ain't running. Ain't getting up and down the court. Mm. So I get it.
But so can you – now that you've been a ref for – how long have you been a ref?
Man, I think I'm going on year 17.
Year 17. Good God. 17 years of being a ref. Now, with all the knowledge you know and all the experiences that you have, can you sit and just watch a basketball game?
No.
Without looking – without worrying about the refs, can you just look at the game?
Nope.
Can't do it.
I enjoy basketball and I can watch a basketball game. I mean, if I'm watching on TV, the angle and they zoom in on matchups and things like that. And referees are not necessarily all in the picture, right? Because you're not going to see all three referees in the picture in the frame most of the time. But no, I can't not notice referees. I was at a Matter Day, big time. In California 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. My friend's nephew was playing. Freshman, eighth grade, type boys game. And I'm like, this guy's not good. This guy's got potential, right? I'm talking about referees. I can see it. Right. Like you can see it. I can tell you before a game even starts if the referee is going to be trash. Right. Because I can tell you from the way that how they carry themselves. I can tell you from the mechanics. And it doesn't take long and you can watch little things and then you'll start to pick it up. It's like the difference between like how somebody blows a whistle. Right. Like you kind of heard it. No. Like every time you hear my whistle, it's crisp. It's loud. Right. It's out of bounds. It's like, that way, right? Out of bounds, white team, blue. No, like all that stuff is when you get up and you start to see and you see like precise mechanics and things like that, like it's all crisp. It's all like it's been rehearsed in the mirror. Like the difference between like guys that throw up numbers when they go to the table and it's foul 33. Was it 33? No, I can tell you that. When you see somebody good do it, like that's the kind of stuff when somebody's like, "Oh, this looks like an NBA." Like that's the kind of stuff that matters. It's white, 33, hit, two shots, right? Like that stuff, that's like the command and stuff like that that you have of being able to control a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff and doing it consistently on top of everything else that you do, the way that you handle coaches, the way that you talk to players. Like all that stuff, that's the stuff that separates those folks that move up, those folks that you see on TV. Like Ted Valentine has earned the right to do some of the stuff that he does and be a name that people know. That's a face you see on TV. Like
Ted
Valentine's been doing it for a minute. So he can also get away with some stuff that I would never pull, even in a JUCO game. Right. So
yeah,
it's just different.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I understand. I was as I was going through what question I was going to ask you, it was just like, can he just sit down and enjoy a basketball game without even, you know, just noticing?
It's a different enjoyment, man. It's a different kind of enjoyment. I mean, it's the same way that I'm sure that you see an E4 carrying himself walking around, right?
Oh yeah.
And if you see his hat to the side, his bag's half zip, and you're like, nope, right?
Jacked up.
Right. And you just see him walking through the airport and it's just like, bro, that uniform made in regulation, right? You can't unsee it.
You can't. Now,
does it ruin my day if I see bad officiating? It does it. I might laugh about it, but I notice.
Yeah. I got you, man. I got you. Well, that's all I got, man. It was great to talk to you. This has been a great interview. I'm definitely going to keep doing some more. Got some more interviews coming y'all way to the fans. Shout out to B. Willingham. Shout out to Ronaldo. Shout out to Reggie. Shout out to our listeners. Shout out to the fans, the people that's going to be watching this. Hey, this thing going to air on Wednesday at 8. So everybody just tune in. Hope everybody enjoyed it. And we good, man. You got any shout outs, man?
Dude, I'm a shout out the whole fam here. I know you gave them some love, but First Rounders has been nothing but gracious to me. I always appreciate getting to come on here. Always appreciate a platform to answer some questions, talk to the boys, talk to everybody who follows. And you know, you can always catch me in the comments too online. I'm always always there, always throwing in some thoughts too. So I appreciate it. Appreciate the time and appreciate everything.
For sure, man. Hey, man, we love to have you. We're glad you come on the show and talk about good old basketball and hey, everything else. And I'm glad you were able to do this interview with me. Hey, man, much love, much appreciated. Fans, man, when y'all see this, get your other people to come on, check us out, man. We're doing big things this year, 2024. We're gonna do some different things, give some more information to y'all, give y'all some more interviews, give y'all some more hot takes, some more cash shit talking, all that good stuff, man. More in 2024 from your good old friends, the First Rounders. Hopefully everybody has a good night. Hey, man, have a good night. Be safe in Vegas, man. Don't party too hard.
Appreciate it.
Peace.
Meditate, sell the things that I cannot change. Like I never sell my ass or my soul for fame. I'm so player, pimp tight, real kosher. I'm debonair. Don't need no deal or exposure.